Anyway, enough of my talking. What I want to do now is I want to introduce to you Jeff Colley. He is the vice president of Northwest Analytical Incorporated. He's presented information that has demonstrated that food safety and quality requirements are now more complex and require sophisticated risk analysis and data analytics reporting. He recently spoke in Beijing about food safety and quality management. He's here tonight to report about mood poisoning and the new food order. Please give a big welcome and a round of applause for Jeff Colley, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, thank you, Clyde. And thank you for you folks. This is actually sort of an interesting experiment on my part. I normally speak to industry and governmental audiences, and a lot of the stuff that I'm trying to talk about, I like to get to the general public, and as we'll be talking about, it's sometimes not easy. I was going to start sort of a George Carlin-style rap when he was mentioning all the alphabet soup. I have been a member of the ACS, the ISA, the IAWP, and the chairman of the IFTQAD, but I didn't have time to practice it like Carlin did. Anyway, if we could go to the first slide, Clyde. What I'm going to be talking about tonight in the food safety issues, number one is the good. We're going to be looking at some examples, plus also of what is working and what people are making work. And also we'll have a little bit of a video of a TV program I was involved in last year on safety in the food supply chain. And then we're going to talk about the bad. These are the problems. There's our favorite friend, Stuart Parnell of Peanut Corp of America, delightful chap. I'll talk with much venom about him shortly. And then the ugly. This is the terrorism thing that Clyde has been talking about. Now, I will agree with him that the real danger of food-related terrorism is not so much that you are poisoning a lot of people, but you are destroying confidence. And actually, one of the cases I will talk about was the Hallmark Westland case, where it wasn't a food safety problem, but it was presented as such. And also the realities of dealing with the concern for terrorist attacks. And believe me, government and industry right now is very concerned about it. We have the bioterrorism regulations, the whole industry of track and trace type of software is a growing one. Several of my colleagues are making good money at it. I'm trying to figure out how to get part of that. But the issue is that it is a real concern. We need to guard about it. However, I contend these guys are real amateurs compared to category number two, the bad players, which are the real problem. Let's go to the next one. Okay, food safety. Like I say, we're going to be talking about what's working and what people are trying to do. Secondly, what's not? The gaming of the system. That's the Stuart Parnells of the world. That's the folks like San Lu Dairy in China and so forth. And where does terrorism fit? And then finally, a particular cross that I keep bearing around is the story you get dealing with the narrative in the media. And this is a very real problem that has been alluded to in a lot of the examples that people are discussing here, is that the information is not clearly and accurately presented. They like to have a simple narrative, and they don't want to discuss the important details and the realities with folks. Okay, if we could go to the next one. Now, food safety, there's a huge international effort, and I'm happy to say that I am part of that, of developing the food safety support systems. That means the food that gets to your table is safe. And I will say that probably at no point in human history has there been a higher level of food safety in the supply chain. And when you consider the massive amount of food that moves over tremendous distances to huge numbers of people, that's a pretty defensible statement. Let's look at some of the things. Number one, you may have heard the term HACCP. That's an acronym, we love acronyms, that stands for Hazard Analysis and Critical Control Points. This is something that grew up, started with the space program. NASA contracted with Pillsbury to develop a food safety program for the early space program. Nothing's worse than having an astronaut puking or working over his diapers in a Mercury capsule. This is very inconvenient, and it threatens missions. Since then, it has matured to become pretty much the science-based way that we guarantee food safety within organizations. I'm not going to go into great detail about it right now. If you want to ask questions, I'll be happy to elaborate upon it. Secondly is the whole concept of food safety management systems. This is an area that I'm particularly involved with. There's a codification of this with the ISO standard 22000, which one of my colleagues is head of the U.S. delegation to ISO on that. Very important advances there. So the whole concept of supply chain management is critical here. As you may have gathered from many of the items being discussed, the problem is not so much just the food processor in a given location. It's the fact that their ingredients and raw materials are globally sourced. And without a properly disciplined system in place, you have no idea where this material is coming from, how it was produced, how it was handled in transit, and how it was finally delivered to the product. Again, we will discuss that further. And then finally is the Global Food Safety Initiative. This is a effort. There are now four recognized audit schemes that are used worldwide. And you'll find your major food retailers are heavily buying into this. Last year, Walmart here in the United States issued the requirement that as of this year, all of their vendors are going to have an auditable food safety system to deliver to them. Likewise, in Europe, you have firms like Tesco and Carrefour's. You may not know them here, although they do own many American supermarket chains as part of the globalization of resources. But you will find them all around the world. And if you think that a big Fred Meyer's or Safeway is large here, wait until you've walked into a Carrefour's or an Ahold. The Europeans do love mega marts. The Carrefour's that I bought some stuff in Beijing was amazing. I mean, there is no store in Portland anywhere near that big. And it's interesting. So all of these folks have bought into this system, as indeed as major food producers such as Nestle, Unilever, etc. And they're well-designed systems, and there has been a huge amount of effort by professionals, by governments, and by the industry to set up food safety systems. So these are comforting things. Let's go on to the next one. And just to go through what should happen in a vendor certification program, number one, you have to specify what it is you want to buy. What's the product and what's the process that makes it? And then you have to certify that that vendor is capable of doing that. And that requires on-site audits, their history, and some real analytical data about it. Then you need audits to make sure they're still doing it. And then all the time that they keep producing and delivering stuff to you, reports on the status of their process, what was actually making that, the process that made the product, and what got finally delivered to you. One thing I love about the Peanut Corp of America case that was mentioned, I've been writing some papers on this. If you do a checklist of all of these items and what should go in to delivering food safety to your plate, Peanut Corp of America violated each and every one of those checklists. So they are definitely in my blacklist and definitely show us what should not be done. Next slide, please. Now, one example of a job being done right is with the USDA's Ag Marketing Service and the National School Lunch Program. The specification that was developed by a colleague of mine, Steve Olson, for the purchase of ground beef for the school lunch program is a beautiful example of doing this right. And you can, next slide is fine, put that up. And you can see one example of it. Since the 2003 contract year, when they first started this, they have reduced the occurrence of salmonella in the raw material from over 5% to now, and that's OT7 is the last data I have plotted here, but it's even lower now. It's hovering around 1%. That's probably the limit of the natural system of how low you're going to get the salmonella in the raw material. Remember, when we talk about these various bugs, they are part of the natural system. There's no way in the world you're going to get away when dealing with poultry without salmonella. There's no way in the world you're going to get together with beef without dealing with salmonella or E. coli or whatever. The game is, how do we reduce it to low enough levels that we can all tolerate it and not get sick? Now, in the case of the school lunch program, as I mentioned, they designed a very good program. I had a rather fun experience last year of being involved with a television program in the Feast or Famine series. This is produced by a group. It's one of the many that produces TV programs to feed the great mall of cable and satellite broadcast. And it was on food safety and the supply chain. And we used the example of the National School Lunch Program to show how this was done. These are some interior shots at Cherry Meats in South Chicago. I mean, these guys, this is old school place. I'm going to have a little video clip of this before we go on much further description. But this is owned by the Pulsa brothers, who are third generation Lithuanian meat processors in South Chicago. And it's sort of a neat environment. Can we bring that video up? Let's see if we can do that. And then I'll probably comment a bit over it, and then we'll go into further what it's about.
The best quality ground beef for school kids. Quality and value go hand in hand. And the quality has to meet the needs of our customer. And our customers, we feel, are the school kids.
We visit Cherry Meats in Chicago to discover how food safety and food wholesomeness are ensured through every step of the food chain. Cherry Meats is a major supplier to the school lunch program.
The company actually was started by my grandfather. It was during the Depression. He had a horse and buggy, and he sold meats off the horse and buggy to people on the street.
Our products generally are for school systems and for food service use. We make hamburger patties, we make sausage items, and we also make products that go for retail use.
We demand that we bring in the best product we can get, and we've got a great partnership with a couple beef suppliers, and we do stay strictly within those companies. In other words, we don't go on the outside and try to get the cheapest product we can. We customize our suppliers into training them what we need. They make it for us the way we need it, and then we just maintain that quality throughout the process.
The quality and safety of the meat here does not rely solely on inspection. Dr. John Surak, food safety consultant at Surak Associates in Clemson, South Carolina, says that food safety cannot be inspected into a product. And end product testing is costly, time-consuming, and not reliable.
All of the inspection of final product usually brings a false sense of security. We don't normally test enough product to be able to make a decision on what is happening with a specific lot.
Our inspection systems, which were very good and have always been very good, always focus on product inspection, product control. So the biggest change, and that was important to the ground beef program, is that we learned to get complying product. It had to come from a process that complied. In other words, you cannot inspect product to comply. It has to be produced to comply. So that's where we're changed now, to go to more of a process control.
They use supply chain management.
Supply chains, of course, are the whole linkage from the beginning of your raw material production through the process to the final delivery to the end customer. The idea of a supply chain management system is you're managing not only the logistics, the flow of the material throughout the system, but also, is the material as it moves from one point to the other the right material in the right condition so the next part of the process can properly handle it? Supply chain quality management is a very important contributor to providing safe food. If you have your process well known, identified, and under control, you create a situation where you're very, very unlikely to create a contaminated product.
Sealed tubs of boneless beef arrive at the Cherry Meats loading dock in refrigerated trucks. The meat comes from a packing house that has been chosen carefully to meet Cherry Meats requirements. In fact, they have built a vendor-customer relationship together to be sure that all meat entering the processing system is always at the standards that Cherry wants for its school lunch customer.
It is important that the boneless beef coming into the operation be of acceptable quality. And that as it goes through their operation, they know what is happening as far as cleanliness and pathogen levels, and that they are not introducing any problems, and that the final product, as it goes into the patty or to the coarse ground beef package, is of a good quality, low pathogens, the right level of fats, etc.
The boneless beef is lifted into a grinder. One beef product is coarse ground, which will be turned into 1 pound and 10 pound chubs, ground beef that can be used for any number of food dishes, such as lasagna, meatballs, chili, and meat sauces. More finely ground beef will be made into hamburgers.
The main thing that we want to monitor and maintain is temperature, not only of the product, but the coolers that it's stored in, and the time that it's stored in that cooler. If we can keep anything 40 degrees or less, we're going to minimize any kind of bacterial growth.
We have a lot of long-time employees. When we do hire, we do put them through food safety handling instruction. For the first week, they are watched very closely to make sure they do follow all the rules and regulations that we've set, in addition to meat inspection and AMS. Hair nets, beard nets, gloves, sanitary gloves, removing of all garments once they leave a production area, washing their hands when they re-enter, putting new gloves on once they enter. All this is very, very important. What we try to do is eliminate as much of the handling of the product as we can. Over the years, we've mechanized to such an extent where our patty operation, for example, once the patties are formed, they are never touched. They go through the freezing process, the packaging process, the bagging process, the boxing process, without ever being touched by human hands.
Nobody.
Identify what are the potential hazards in a food product. Then we design control procedures to control those hazards, either by preventing their incorporation into the food product or by eliminating through processing steps. And we implement those control procedures, and we verify that system is working day in and day out.
Both the USDA and the FDA use HACCP standards for food. That means Hazard Analysis and Critical Control Point. This has been strengthened with the ISO 22000 Food Safety Management System.
Those of us who worked on ISO 22000, we made a commitment to revise that standard every 5 years. And the object is to bring all these new technologies and describe into a standard so it can be used by food processors like Cherry Meats to improve food safety.
We do what's known as an on-site capability assessment, where an auditor will actually come out and essentially it's the old saying, do what you say and say what you do. And if you wrote down saying you're going to do everything, we merely check out to make sure you actually do it.
Through what various steps through the process, samples are taken into the lab to be tested for fat content and other factors so that adjustments to the process can be made right away. This data is entered on control charts so the manufacturer and the USDA can quickly spot variances from ideal standards and quickly make corrections if necessary.
The main tools that we use now are SPC tools, statistical process controls. And what we do is we try to take all that data that we collect throughout the day, whether it's for metal detection, portion size, microbial counts, and what we do is try to take all that data and put it into some type of statistical database, which we would now we use Northwest Analytical.
Okay. Clyde tells me we are running lean on time. God, they don't make TV like that every day. So much better than Angry Housewives. But that's my own subtle comment. You didn't get to see my last bits of lines in it. But the point is, that program works, and it works incredibly well. Since the 2003 contract year, they've handled over 300 million pounds of ground beef each and every year and have yet to have a salmonella or E. coli occurrence in that product that's delivered. It can be done, ladies and gentlemen. They've demonstrated it. Now, let us look to the bad. This is where a lot of the problem is in the game, those who are gaming the system. We're going to look very briefly at both the melamine adulteration case and the Peanut Corp of America. My favorite friend, Stuart Burnell. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, for those of you who forgot your high school organic chemistry, that is melamine. And the reason why that has gotten in the news the last few years, it's a cheap, easy way to boost the apparent protein content of a food product. Now, what they're looking for when they do a general assay of protein is nitrogen. Look at that molecule. It's got a ton of nitrogen in it. For every pound of melamine you add to a product, it looks like you put 4.5 pounds of protein in. That's much cheaper than actually giving protein. Oh, we moved a little faster there. I was going to say, that's the form you normally see melamine in, your melamine dishes, especially for those of you who like mid-century classic dishes. But next little bit there, this is the form your adulterant sees it. A nice bag of melamine, this coming from the Tijang International Trading Company Limited. Why would they want to use melamine besides boosting protein? Great. It's the perfect thing for adulteration or even tourism. It is odorless. It is tasteless. It's a white powder. The acute toxicity of it is about the same of table salt, 3 grams per kilogram. What's that mean? Somebody who eats something laced with melamine isn't going to drop dead right away. However, both in the cases of Menu Foods and when they bought the wheat gluten and proteins from China, and then in the case of the formula poisoning in adulteration in China, when you have small organisms, babies, dogs, kitty cats, who are eating one primary food source, kitty chow, dog chow, baby formula, it's going to hit you hard and cause irreparable kidney damage. A little anecdote. Clyde mentioned I was speaking in China in the fall. It was at the China International Food Safety Quality Conference, one of the speakers there. And it was great timing. The Sunday before the conference started, the whole melamine thing broke in Beijing. And actually, as I landed Monday afternoon and was unpacking in the hotel, I happened to flip on the TV to CCTV 9, which is the government's English language channel. And what were they showing? The day before in Beijing, they had had a government hearing about the melamine poisoning of the baby formula. And here you had executives from some of the dairy firms like Sanlu, et cetera, and they were just espousing virtues that would make a neocon businessman's heart warm. Oh, you don't understand. I mean, it's so hard to make a profit these days. There's competition. The costs are rising. What is a poor businessman to do? And that plastic baggie gives you the answer. People gaming the system. They figure they can slip under it, make a profit, and then move forward. Next slide, please. We're trying to get time here. This is our friend Peanut Corp of America and Stuart Parnell. I do hope they find negligent homicide for this individual, but you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't say. Everything that they did in this case was wrong. As you may have read, over the period of about 14, 15 months, they had 12 positive assays for salmonella in the peanut butter. What did they do? One of the things that's anathema to a person like I, they shopped the assays. They kept taking samples to different labs until somebody came back with a negative one. That is gross negligence. That's also the kind of thing the school lunch program supply chain system that I mentioned to you has a way around, where you have fixed agencies reporting on reporting on fixed intervals. You can't shop your assays that way. This individual, if you read the reports, and if you want a real horror story, on the FDA.gov site is the actual 483 document, which is an inspector's document, 9 handwritten pages of all of the problems that they had at that Blakely, Georgia plant. 9 handwritten pages. And John Surak, one of the people you saw in that little film clip, knows the guy, and apparently he didn't enter a lot of the stuff that had gotten duplicated too many times. hideous. This man is trying to game the system. That was the whole point. Ship product, we can't afford to keep it around. These guys are your real food safety consideration, and they're one reason why the average terrorist is going to have a fly beneath the radar. They're amateurs compared to characters like him. Let's go on to the next. The ugly. Terrorism. Small, discrete events. The goal, as Clyde has mentioned, destroy confidence in the economy. And there's a lot of defenses in the place, but there are holes. One of the biggest things, Clyde mentioned the Westland Hallmark case, is actually misinformation campaigns that are given for... that's the peanut corp thing. There we go. This was in USA Today after the initial part of the Humane Society of the U.S. Videos came out. And a little bit of clarity. The Humane Society of the U.S. is not related to your animal shelter. They're basically a companion group to PETA against industrial farming, against meat consumption. I don't really have a problem with that. I do have a problem with a lot of their tactics. The problem that Hallmark Westland had was they violated the ultimate rule. Thou shalt not embarrass your regulator. And when the videos that the HSUS guys think show up on Good Morning America, you have violated that rule. Typically, in that same year, there were 87 other cases of inhumane treatment of cattle in slaughter yards. What happens? The regulatory guys go in, they say you're closed down till you can correct this, demonstrate you've put procedures in place and oversight, and then we get back in operation and we watch the hell out of you. That didn't happen here. Now, the FSIS, the Food Safety Inspection Service, who's responsible for the meat, overreacted. And this massive recall of 143 million pounds of Hamburg. You'll notice, if you can read the text there, however, this is a Class 3 recall. It is not an issue of food safety. It's an issue of violating procedure. There's a lot in the procedures for the way the meat is handled, what tissues are allowed in the ground beef that will prevent VSE and similar type of problems. There are also the animals that were being concerned were being mistreated. Steve and Stan Mandel fell down. They had a wonderful ground beef operation in Westland. When they bought the Hallmark slaughter yard, the guys, as often as said, were not cowboys, and they did not manage it properly. So they got what they deserved, but it was not a food safety problem. However, the narrative that you saw, like in this article and all the others coming out, presented it as a big one. National School Lunch Program was used as the headliner because that gets to the kiddies and concerns. Actually, most of this meat is going to Costco, In-N-Out Burger, and Jack in the Box. The situation here is a classic case, though, of how an organization that wants to create confusion and fear can do so by controlling the narrative. Now, one of the authors of this newspaper article called me up because we have a lot of stuff on our website about the National School Lunch Program. And indeed, we sold a little software to the grinding operation. And she wanted to know all about it, and I told her what I knew. I knew nothing about the slaughter, never having dealt with that corporation, but sent her a whole lot of information, some of which you saw a little bit of here. Interestingly enough, that never showed up in print. You know, that people don't want to talk about that. It's a little more complex. It's not as headline grabbing, and that is part of the problem, is the narrative in the press. Okay, we can just clip on here. A little side note of this, Pravda did the same kind of headlines and then stole some of the text I'd written in an essay that, of course, completely contradicted the headlines. Okay, Pravda, I can get around that. They're not respectable journalism. The Wall Street Journal did the same thing 2 weeks later. And again, glaring headline, the text of it refutes it. Okay, can't quite go into everything, but any questions or whatever, I'll be happy to talk.
learning about the school lunch program. So that meat would be better than the meat we would get at our supermarkets as far as a lesser risk of salmonella versus like 1% versus 5% risk chance?
Oh, that 1%, that isn't what was delivered. That's in the raw material. Because part of the prerequisite conditions was cleaning up the animal handling and the sanitation and the slaughter process. Actually, they have never delivered a lot of food that has above critical levels of salmonella or E. coli, period. Yes, actually, that 143 million pounds, I've seen the analytical data and the bacteriological data on it. Yeah, it's better than typically what you get in the supermarket.
What would be the percentage of salmonella in beef at a supermarket you would expect?
That's hard to say. It can be all over the map depending upon. It's actually, with coming from reputable sources, it's fairly low. There's a lot of regulation in this stuff. There is much more danger in meat and poultry in what happens from the supermarket to your kitchen counter.
What about into getting to the supermarket? Like, I'm thinking about transporting meat to the supermarket as far as in the economy. If the economy goes down, the truckers can't get to the supermarkets in time, does that increase the risk of salmonella?
It could. You know, a lot of that depends upon what people do. If they do what they're supposed to do, no. But we all know what that can happen in times of stress, especially economic stress. People tend to take shortcuts. Hopefully you're not as bad as Stuart Parnell or the San Luis executives who are knowingly poisoning people. Yeah.
Thank you, Jeff. Jeff Colley, give him a big hand for giving us the real story. It's like he said, the narrative is always different from the reality, and that's why we have things here at Ground Zero Lounge. We bring people like Jeff to the show to give you the facts. We definitely deal in a lot of facts here at the Ground Zero Lounge. Some of them are very uncomfortable for people because they don't necessarily gel, like he says, with the narrative. If CNN says one thing, if MSNBC says another thing, and we say something different, we start seeing a clash of information. It all depends on where you want to get your information. We have given you some very, very, very good information tonight about what you're going to be seeing and what you are seeing. What you see is you see salmonella content, melamine content. You hear about all these things and also about the school lunch program and the meat programs. The meat program, as he said, it came out a certain way because that's what the media wanted you to know. They didn't want you to know the truth. They didn't want you to know that there was some safety handlers involved. But see, they don't want you to know, too, that there are these isolated incidents and all these people, like what happened with the Peanut Corporation, where criminal negligence is going on and collusion is going on to keep it quiet. Go ahead.
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a point. 1992 Rio Earth Summit is where they listed all the sustainable development syllabus. And among with other things, along in that syllabus says no cloven-hoofed animals.
No cloven-hoofed animals.
Problem, reaction, solution.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So it's the idea that they want to eliminate cloven-hoofed animals?
Yeah.
Is that why we had the culling of all those animals during the foot and mouth diseases?
Right.
Interesting.
You'll be seeing a lot more.
Interesting.
Yeah. Most of the things on that list are actually happening now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Problem, reaction, solution. It's the Hegelian dialectic. It's all part of this. You can right now take this to heart, that we're going to be hearing more stories about food, about the handling, the mishandling, and the way it's not going to reach you. The way store shelves are going to be empty. I don't know if it's going to be as drastic as I tend to make it, but I mean, I've heard stories from people of how bad it can get. Sure, meat supplies are safe because they take the time to be safe. Some get through the cracks. However, As we've discussed, Jeff and I, you know, you can eat one in 25,000 raw eggs and get salmonella poisoning. That's how, you know, if you decide you're going to take the chance of eating your eggs raw or over easy, you can still get salmonella poisoning if they're not cooked correctly. Alex, go ahead.
And super briefly, it's also about the feed as well, the feed quality. You were talking about Monsanto, and you've talked many times about genetically modified food and what it does to the human body. Think about the stuff that the cows are eating, that mm-hmm. we are eating, and it's an even lower grade of GMO food, and so all the stuff has an effect.
Case of that is the whole issue with the feedlot type of agriculture. where you're putting all the grain content into the latter part of the animal cycle. There's a lot of conjecture that may be part of why we see the 105H7 bacteria being more common now than we used to.
So it's bad planning on the part of the compartmentalized farms, right? Is that what we're looking at, the way the farms are all they're feeding incorrectly? Often. Okay, go ahead.
Have you seen any information about the levels of arsenic in the runoff at chicken slaughter plants? Because I had a friend at Johns Hopkins University do a thesis on that.
I haven't seen that data. Wouldn't be surprised. Heavy metals can come from all... Eons ago, I used to do environmental heavy metals. That's a long time. But a lot of that stuff accumulates in very strange places and can pop up. So it could very well happen, depending upon what process they're using. And
is there any other questions quickly? We've got, we're running out of time. We just want to wrap up. But we really, really are very happy to have Jeff. Okay, we got one more coming out. Good. Okay. Here we go. Another question. Go ahead.
Well, actually, I was just wondering why you're avoiding the real topic this week, Clyde. I mean, you haven't mentioned once anything about Michelle Obama's sleevelessness.
Oh, yeah. Forgot all about that. I don't know. I also forgot to talk, you know, about the Brad Pitt and, you know, Christina. Well, never mind. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. A lot of stuff going on, and I'm missing out on all the cool stuff, right? I don't watch enough TV. I'm just busily trying to prepare this stuff. Once again, we'd like to thank Jeff Colley. Give him a big round of applause for being here tonight. We'd like to thank Bill Koontz for videotaping this for Google. It's going to go out to the entire world. Thank you so much for that, because they need to know the truth about food and the food safety and food that's going on, going out to you. Melamine, food, infant food, some of your lettuce, percolate, these types of things are real issues that they're not talking about. Yes, we talk about sleeveless Michelle Obama, but here we're talking about the truth and the facts. And we're very grateful that we're here at Dante's, and Frank provides this. Give Frank a round of applause for providing this bar for us. And also, for those of you that have come tonight for Karaoke from Hell, it's coming up. But also, happy birthday to Jen Lane from Barfly Magazine. It's her birthday tonight. And once again, we'd like to congratulate Rick Emerson moving this Thursday to KUFO. Good night, everybody, from the Ground Zero Lounge. I'm Clyde Lewis, and Karaoke from Hell is up next. Thank you so much for being here tonight.